It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It was 66 years ago today that Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier, taking the field as the first baseman for the Brooklyn Dodgers. That moment, as well as the career of Jackie Robinson, is being celebrated in the newly released movie 42, The Jackie Robinson Story. Joining us to talk about that topic, among others, is our sports guy, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus Bob Dvorak. His video blog is Sportsnet. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Paul. Yep, it's a roiling time in sports, is it not? But it always is.
It certainly is. And you're blogging about Jackie Robinson today.
Yes, I did the backstory about Jackie Robinson's first game in Pittsburgh in 47 and how he reached out to Curtis Roberts, the first pirate to integrate the home team.
How was Jackie Robinson received in Pittsburgh? What do we know about that?
Okay, we know one thing. When he came up to the plate, he got an ovation from the fans that were there.
At
but
Forbes
it
Field.
It wasn't, a perfect day. Actually, the manager of the Pirates imposed automatic fines on his players if they did not throw at Jackie Robinson if he was sliding in the second base on a double play.
Throw at his head?
Yes, absolutely.
Ouch. Well, some infielders tend to do that as a tactic to, make the player have to, slide out of the way of the throw to first. But why was that? Who was the manager and why was he so hostile?
It was just a sign of the times. I mean, Jackie Robinson was greeted. He was hazed and razzed by the opponents in any city he played in. You'll see in the movie that Philadelphia was especially harsh on him. But it was, it was a tactic to try to get him off his game. If they got a rise out of him, he would be reacting to what they were doing rather than having his attention focused on playing baseball.
One story I have heard, and you can confirm this for me, what has been discussed in the past is that Hank Greenberg, who was Jewish, a great major leaguer, power hitter, mainly with Detroit, but he came to Pittsburgh and was playing first base. And when Jackie Robinson got to first base, he greeted him very warmly. And the feeling was that here were two guys, a Jewish man and an African-American man, who had experienced much of the same hostility.
That is a true story. And Greenberg told him when he got to first base, he said, "You're doing a great job. Just hang in there." And he was, it's the brotherhood, the profession, two baseball players, both of whom had to, overcome their own challenges. But Greenberg did say that, yes.
Now, a gentleman named Joe Gazzardi wrote a piece this weekend in the Post-Gazette stating that the Pirates incorrectly, according to him, claim that second baseman Curt Roberts, who you mentioned, that it is incorrect that he was the guy that broke the Pirates' color line in 1954. Mr. Gazzardi insists that Puerto Rican-born Carlos Bernier was the first. What do you know about this?
Yeah, I mean, I had heard about Carlos, but like you say, the Pirates and Major League Baseball officially recognized Curt Roberts. So it's it's another element. It's always a the nuances of baseball and history. Always good to see a different opinion on that.
Current day baseball, the Pirates and the Reds yesterday, a game that saw one of the Pirates players hit a ball to deep right field, into the stands, in fact, Corey Snyder, or Travis Snyder, I should say, and a fan caught the ball. He dropped it back onto the field. The umpires ruled it a double and fan interference. The fan got thrown out of the game. And they looked at replays. It was, in fact, a home run, but they didn't see that. Bob, what do we need to do to help the umpires get these calls right?
If you're looking for perfection in baseball or any other sport or any other human endeavor, you're not going to find it. Now, I understand the concept of replay, and they do get the calls right some of the time, but I'm an old school guy. I can live with the human error because replay does nothing but slow the game down and add an extra layer of bureaucracy, an extra layer of judgment, and I just don't think they're ever going to get it right. I saw the same thing you saw, Paul. You say, "Wow, clearly that's a home run," and you know, give the ball back to the fan. But that's not the way it turns out.
Do they need to add more umpires, like the two that they put down the lines in the postseason when they have six instead of four?
That's an interesting point, but I go back to last year's playoff with that infield fly rule, and I jumped out of my chair and said, "You idiots, you got it wrong," and a replay would show that, and they still stayed with it. So, they can add more, they can add more cameras, they can do everything anything they want, but they're still not going to get it perfectly right. And I'm not a real firm believer in technology being the savior of our pastimes. I think they just slow it down. I really do. I think it's an intrusion. I can live with their mistakes because they have to put up with mine.
All right, last thing, Bob. The Frozen Four wrapped up with Yale winning its first championship ever, the oldest hockey program in the country. How do you feel that Pittsburgh did staging one of the premier college sports events in the country?
Well, right, and a shout-out to Jesse Root, the Mount Lebanon player who got a goal in the big game, and congratulations to the Bulldogs. I think Pittsburgh put forth its best foot, and everybody associated with this Frozen Four tournament was incredibly impressed, not only with the operation of the Console Energy Center and the hospitality that the Penguins provided, but Pittsburgh as a whole. I think all of these players and fans who came in got a real good impression of the city, which is why you hold these things. And I think, they want to bring it back. I think they'll bring it back.
Bob Dvorak's our sports guy. Check out his sports video blog, Sportsnet. Thank you, Bob. Got to run.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, April is Autism Awareness Month. We'll discuss how changes to the diagnosis of autism could impact families. We'll also look at research which could improve communication between parents and their autistic children. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.